Welcome back. Imagine going to a record store on this day in 1966, seeing that out-of-focus cover of Bob Dylan, somewhere on the streets of New York with an overcoat on. Blonde on Blonde was released, and then you go to another bin and you see the Beach Boys' new album. It's called Pet Sounds. You go home with Pet Sounds and Blonde on Blonde on the same day, huh? Brought to you every Monday at this time by Billy Bob Productions, Volume 2 of the tribute to Bob Dylan on his 80th birthday at Club Soda. The original film has been out for a while. There will be a Volume 2 released on his birthday next week on the 24th. With Mitch Gallo and John Still. Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. Here he is, award-winning writer and broadcaster. So much to discuss over the weekend. Michael Farber, how are you?
Well, rainy day women. That's some intro, boy.
Yeah, the boys want to know if you were at any point in your life ahead. And I said, I didn't think so. I didn't grow up with Michael, but I don't think so.
No, not me.
No. Maybe a cigarette when you were a child.
What's that?
Maybe a cigarette when you were a kid, right?
No,
sneaking a smoke somewhere?
Didn't smoke cigarettes. I pretended to be an athlete, so why would I smoke a cigarette?
Well, I have old newspaper clippings of Lou Gehrig selling cigarettes.
Yeah, that's true. But, by the time I was playing sports in high school, no, I was all in. I just wasn't very good, but I was all in.
All right. Battle of Alberta for the first time since way too long. How do you feel how both teams got there, and how do you feel generally about this?
Oh, I'm excited. And if you grew up in Quebec at a certain time, you're excited for them. Because here, in the 80s, after the Nordiques were part of the expansion, or the four teams from the WHA that got folded into the NHL, we had battles of Quebec, and this was the doppelganger. I mean, what we saw here was going on there, and with tougher guys. I mean, not tougher guys, but more tough guys.
Right.
Maybe not the social undercurrent that we had here. Maybe not the financial undercurrent we had here, with breweries at war and families divided here along different lines, and it became political at times. So you take that away from it. This was the Battle of Alberta. If you were north of Red Deer, you were Oiler, and if you were south of Calgary, and Red Deer is kind of halfway in between, south of Red Deer, you were Calgary. And, you know, they were as crazy as what we saw here. And it was some great hockey. I mean, the skill level was just mind-blowing. I mean, the Oilers were eye candy, right? I mean, they were a team you had to watch because they were so spectacular. And the Magic Man, Kent Nielsen, was part of the Flames. And Lanny McDonald and Al MacInnis on the back end, and Neuendijk joined them later on. I mean, you know, the skill level was so very high, and the animosity matched anything we saw here.
5 minutes left in the first overtime. Here's Lindholm to Gaudreau, near quarter to Kachuk, behind the net to Gaudreau. He walks in front and drops. Lindholm shoots it up. Sure, makes a right shoulder save. Gaudreau scores!
I've been here for 9 years and never had even a sniff of a chance to play them in playoffs. So it's pretty special. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be good for the Providence. It's going to be a lot of fun for them, for us. It's going to be pretty cool series. So
you'll forgive the American for confusing Province and Providence in his excitement. But at least we have the best of the Calgary Flames kind of warming up at the precise, most important time.
Exactly, and Gaudreau didn't have much of a series, and Kachuk didn't have much of a series, and they were big. They were big in Game 7, and Daryl Sutter, who I believe is now 8-3, his teams are anyway, in Game 7s. I thought Calgary would cruise against Dallas. I was clearly wrong about that. But this is a formidable team. I mean, they know how to play heavy hockey, and that's quite often what gets you through in the playoffs. Meanwhile, if you look at what Edmonton did, you know, able to win a 2-0 game and down 3-2 in that series, and Connor McDavid just said, we're not going to lose this. And he took over a series. And if you want to go back in the Rolodex of the mind and find a similar situation, you go back to Mark Messier in 1990 in Game 4 in Chicago. And if Edmonton had lost that, they would have been down 3-1 in that series. Now, Messier essentially terrorized the Blackhawks. I mean, you know, he was running around like a crazy man, had a four-point night, and hit everything, and basically scared Chicago into submission in a remarkable performance. And what we saw in Game 6 and 7, and, of course, the clinching goal, the 2-0 goal in Game 7, you know, that's McDavid. If you look at thrilling players in our lifetimes, Mitch, maybe you start with Bobby Orr. And because you saw more of him than anybody else, Guy Lafleur makes that list. Connor McDavid's right there. He's part of that conversation. And he took a team by the scruff of its neck when it looked like it would, piss away a chance to move on in the playoffs, and he wouldn't let it happen. We always knew that McDavid was going to be great. I mean, that was never going to be an issue, and the points would come, and the individual awards would become. He would be judged on a different scale. He would be judged on the Stanley Cup scale. Ultimately, we will look at Connor McDavid someday and say, how many cups did he win, and how quickly did he win them? We looked at Mario Lemieux that way. We looked at Wayne Gretzky that way. And we looked at Sidney Crosby that way. And this is how they are judged, and this is where McDavid is. And he's 25 now. He's not a kid.
Which takes us to Auston Matthews and the Leafs.
Yeah, and that was the one series I missed on. I thought Tampa was really ready to be beaten. I saw so much slovenly hockey during the year from Tampa. I didn't know if it was boredom or hubris or what. But I said, this team just looks fed up at times. And one game against Montreal, I guess the Lightning won in overtime, if I remember correctly, after blowing a big lead. But they got the big lead and then just decided to fool around and, you know, pad their stats. And to me, I said, no, that's not right. This is not Tampa being Tampa. It's not being Tampa being professional. Not much separated these teams. Basically nothing. And yet Toronto, Game 6, could have, should have won it. And Game 7, until the third period, when Tampa just really played like a champion, should have had a chance. So last year, there was no doubt that the Maple Leafs were a better team than the Canadiens and blew a 3-1 lead. This year, they couldn't find a way to close out Tampa Bay, a team that was sort of asking to be put out of this tournament. So you wonder what you do. Do you just say, oh, there's a fatal flaw here? Or do you look at the Washington Capitals that stuck with a core group and were rewarded with a 2018 Stanley Cup? And a team in Washington can't get out of the first round since.
With Michael Farber every Monday at 4:40, along those lines, we just finished chatting with our pal Dave Bedini from Toronto. Barry Trotz's name is out there. Does he go to Vegas? Do the Leafs reach out, even though Sheldon Keefe is under contract? Does he go home to Manitoba? How do you feel about Barry Trotz?
Barry Trotz can't coach 20 teams. He's good, but he's not that good. You know, okay, now, Lane Lambert's replaced him, and isn't that wonderful on the island? But Peter DeBoer's gone. And Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, is an impatient sort of fellow, a military guy who's very impatient. So he can go there. He's going to have options. which is going to drive his price up. We'll see what he wants to do. But he can't be going everywhere. If I were Barry Trotz and I saw what Vegas had to offer, you know, that would be a place. Now, if you're Toronto, is Sheldon Keefe the guy? I would suspect, as long as Kyle Dubas is the general manager, Sheldon Keefe will be the guy until further notice. And what Toronto really needs, I don't believe, is anything more than some of their young defensemen to hit. You need something from Sandin and Liljegren and those guys who coming and coming, but they really haven't gone that far. If these guys hit and you know, you figure out what you can do with Riley, maybe you move Riley, you get save some money on Mrazek's contract, if you can get rid of him. Tavares can't go anywhere because of the size of his contract. I mean, this team is not far away. And to just say, oh, we've got to start all over again, you know, that's stupid because you've got so much invested in those four forwards. You really don't have that much wiggle room. So the instinct is, yeah, this is horrible. There's some fatal flaw in the Leafs. I just thought it was a real close series, and I go back with much of what we saw this year, which I think was 115 points. That wasn't a bad season.
With Michael Farber here in Montreal, of course, we wait for the draft. I think we'll be set up there on the Friday, the day of the draft. We'll be on site.
The draft is on the Thursday, though, this year.
Oh, it's Thursday.
Yeah, the first round is a Thursday, and Friday morning / afternoon, you will have rounds 2 through 7.
All right. Is that when the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, Kent Hughes, announces Shane Wright? And what happens next?
Well, I can't see anything else other than taking the best player available, and he's a centerman, and that's a great situation to be in. Last time Montreal was in that situation was 1980. Doug Wickenheiser with a sad story. Opening night that season was against the Blackhawks, and two seats to my left was Doug Wickenheiser. Now, there are a lot of places a person can be. Sitting two seats away from me in the Forum is not a good one for the number one player taken in the draft. Montreal was playing Chicago. On the ice was Denny Savard. He was doing pirouettes. He was great that night. And I just said, oh, this is bad. And we all know what happened with Wickenheiser. What people sometimes don't remember is how they even got Wickenheiser. And this was Sam Pollock. And we talk about, oh, you know, he's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. Well, Sam Pollock in 1976, prior to my getting here, traded two nondescript forwards, Ron Andruff and Sean Shanahan, to Colorado for a little cash, but mostly just for the opportunity to flip draft choices in 1980, 4 years in the future. Now, we think, we don't know for a fact, but we think that's because Pollock had his eye on this skinny kid named Gretzky, who would have been coming to the NHL that year. Now, of course, Gretzky went to the WHA, the Raiders, and the Oilers, the Pacers. What was their name?
Yeah, the Indianapolis Pacers.
Racers.
Oh, okay.
Indianapolis, yeah. Racers, and then the Oilers. But this is how far ahead Sam Pollock was thinking, and didn't quite work out that way, but Colorado did what it had to do, and Montreal ended up getting its pick, which is how Doug Wickenheiser became available. One final thing here, Mitch, is people say, well, why didn't they take Denny Savard? He's a great junior player right here. Well, in Regina, I mean, Wickenheiser had torn it up. And there was not one team among the 21 that had Savard the number one on its draft board. Because I asked a year after the draft, and 15, including Montreal, had Doug Wickenheiser, and the other 5 or 6 had Dave Babich. So everybody, including this franchise here, missed on Denny Savard as the number one draft choice. And imagine how that might have changed things for Montreal in the 1980s.
Oh, there are some people who haven't let anybody forget it for 40 years. All right, we got. I hate to do this, but we're real tight. What in the world happened to Greg Norman and Phil Mickelson?
We'll look at Greg Norman, who described what happened with Khashoggi, the murdered journalist, as a mistake. Of course, Norman's involved with the Saudi Golf League. A mistake is ordering red wine with fish. It's not what happened to Khashoggi. And it's such an embarrassment. And the Saudi Golf Tour is... we'll see how many people defect to it, you know, for the money. But Greg Norman just made a fool of himself.
Everybody makes mistakes. You ever ordered fish with red wine, Gallo?
Of course not.
I'm just checking.
Oh, Mitch, I could have pretty much anything. Turkey, whatever you're supposed to have white wine with. I don't drink white wine.
There you go.
Not for me.
All right. Michael, thank you as always. Have yourself a terrific week.
You too.